Thorns on the Highway. Thorns and thistles shall it bring forth. Genesis 3:18. The pathway of the warriors of the cross is seldom without a few thorns, some more, some less. The path of the missionary who steps out on faith to trust God for everything and forges ahead in spite of the plans and devices of men is bound to be beset with obstacles. Many things we have learned which occurred during the lifetime of Faith Stewart. We have asked her about them, and she would tell us. Once she was lying in bed, and when we pled with her to tell us the story, she raised up and said, "Yes, I will tell it to you, but do not put it in the book. Do not write anything, however true, that might hurt another." We argued that pleasant and unpleasant things that missionaries have to bear go into all histories of their lives. But she contended that if the harm done to her by others must be known, only the most necessary things should be told. This is typical of Faith Stewart. All through her life she has borne the unjust things heaped on her, and with her rugged Scotch nature has stood the storm and forged ahead for Christ. But we have seen her bowed head bent in grief and shedding bitter tears when the injustice wounded and hurt at some critical period of her life. Down through the years of service, many have been the questions asked about some things that happened in her life. One of these, why did Faith Stewart, who was so successful in her mission work in India, come home when that work was just at the high peak of attainment, and also at a time when it was ready and equipped to go forward in greater strides for God? We have, in the very kindest way we know, tried to explain what really did happen that brought her back, a broken-hearted woman, from that field. But being sold out to God, she went bravely on, trusting that God would lead. We have briefly mentioned how, after sacrifice and the hardest labor, she was able to raise up 2 English-speaking missions in Havana, and how she was robbed of that mission by an insincere soul who came down professing to help lift the load. This is the only weakness we have seen in this consecrated life, her willingness to trust those who made a profession until they proved themselves unworthy. But often it was a costly experience, and she suffered great loss again and again because of it. However, that mission which was deliberately taken from her has never grown to any great extent. Meanwhile, God prospered the work of her hands, and many missions have sprung up, as well as the Children's Home, and many other phases of the work as well. Finally, the Church in the United States began to be aware of the strength of the work and become interested. When she had first come to Cuba, they had advised her to make no effort to learn the language. She had learned the Indian language where she labored before, but she was now 53 years old, and they felt that her age was against her attaining it. Yet, with characteristic determination, she began at once to learn the native tongue. Day after day she wrote down 10 words to learn, and replaced them on the next day. Also, she secured a good teacher and went ahead. So she was soon able to reach the Cuban people, and God prospered there, as we have mentioned before. When the members of the missionary board heard how the work was multiplying and moving forward, they began to get interested in her effort in Cuba. As reports came in from time to time, it seemed to be wise to look into the matter. Some of the members of the board had come to Cuba and seen for themselves the growing work and were astonished at what had been accomplished in a few years. Finally, they invited her to meet with the board when convenient and talk matters over. Accordingly, when she went over to the United States again, she went before the board as requested and met with several men who served on the board at that time. After preliminaries, they asked her if she was willing to, at this time, come under the board. Questions had been asked them about this matter, and in 1934 they had sent out a letter in answer to these questions, and we quote, "It was with the approval of the missionary board, and with the understanding that she would receive her support from some friends and others who were interested in seeing her start a work in Cuba." So, in all the time she was in Cuba, she was never under the supervision of the missionary board of the Church of God at Anderson, Indiana. As time went on, however, and the work prospered and became a work that any church group might be proud to have in another land, efforts were made to persuade her to be affiliated. At that time, she was willing to do this on reasonable grounds. But when individuals later questioned the missionary board about her work, another letter was sent out from headquarters on July 6, 1942, reading thus, "Dear Pastors, from time to time we have received inquiries at our office concerning E. Faith Stewart and her relationship and the relationship of her work in Cuba to the missionary board. Each time such an inquiry has come, we have taken time to write a personal reply so that the minister would understand clearly the position of the missionary board. Sometimes inquiries have been made in person while visiting camp meetings and congregations in various parts of the country. In order that the pastors may have a general explanation of the situation, this mimeographed statement has been prepared. At the present time, Sister Stewart and her work in Cuba have no connection with the missionary board. This is not because the missionary board would have it this way, but rather because Sister Stewart herself wishes to be independent. The fact is, the missionary board has, on several occasions, both by correspondence and in conference with Sister Stewart while in this country, endeavored to persuade her to be associated with the missionary board." The fact was that Sister Stewart really did go into conference with the members of the missionary board, and that with the desire to be affiliated with them. She had been asked to plan a budget for the expenses necessary for the support of the mission each month. She carefully made out such a budget for the least possible cost to run the mission and the children's home, not even allowing for growth, and presented it to the members of the conference. They then told her that the total allowance that would be given would be the sum of $400 a month. This must pay for all rents and running expenses for ministers to live and provide for the homes for children. There were at that time several missions and the growing children's home. It also left no salary for her, as she had never asked for nor expected any. But $400 a month was not in any way a sufficient means to carry on even the work at that present time. "Brethren," she said, "the very lowest figure that we can exist on, with the very plainest living possible, is at this time $900. This amount we have prayed in and have been able to keep going. Do you mean that you are offering us $400 for extension work to add to that which we are able to bring in by faith?" They replied, "No, your entire budget allowance for all expenses for the month would be $400. The $500 extra that you pray in would be turned over to the board." "But that would mean that we would be compelled to shut down some missions and parts of the work that have been raised up through real sacrifice, to discard the work, and have less labor and outreach for God. I cannot believe that God would be pleased. It does not seem right, after we have striven to go out in the fields and gather these congregations, to neglect and lose them. Will you come under the board under these terms, or will you not? That is the question," said one member of the board. "Under these conditions, no, 1,000 times no," she quietly answered. "Perhaps things will get harder for you, and you will be glad to come under the board." "It is clear to me that you do not know the stuff that Faith Stewart is made of," she replied respectfully. And the conference ended just that way. She left their presence and went sadly out. One of the members followed her and asked that she come to his house for supper that evening, but she then explained that she had an engagement for that hour. "Then come by and have breakfast," he entreated, "and I want you to know that I am sorry for what did happen this afternoon, It was unjust, and wife and I wished to have no part in it. She went to the home for the early morning meal at the anxious request, and these fine people were her friends as openly after the break as before. She knew that she could not sacrifice the new works after God had opened doors and the gospel was being brought to new villages. God had blessed the work and proved that He was with her. And now, with a budget totaling $900 a month, she had no choice. She must shoulder the support of the work by faith and move on for God. This meant praying in every bit of the support and expanding as far as God would let her enlarge her borders. Sadly, indeed, she returned to her field once more to hold the reins and lean heavily on the Heavenly Father. However, the circular letter, of which we have quoted an excerpt above, brought suffering and great financial loss to the work. Friends at home did not understand the fact that to accept the seemingly generous amount would only mean to go backward in her missionary effort in Cuba. Offerings fell off, and hardships began to come. Sufferings for workers all were endured. But the God who did not fail Elijah did not fail Faith Stewart. Fasting and prayer and waiting on the Lord, living meanwhile a life of holy endeavor, won out, and in spite of the hardships, the mission still grew and prospered spiritually. But again, Faith Stewart was brokenhearted. In man fear of displeasing prominent leaders in the church, many old-time friends now began to shun her because she was not in favor with the board. Others did not doubt her sincerity, but feared to displease those in authority. The solid training of her youth and the loyalty she had herself ever exercised caused her to cling to old friendships. Because she could not yield to them with a clear conscience before God, she was ostracized and compelled to make a complete break. Thus was the last effort on her part or theirs to ever cooperate together again. Their attitude toward her seemed to be that, unless she come under the board, she had no place among them. I have seen her in deep sorrow over this, standing alone, always if need be, to be true to God, but with a breaking heart because of the love for her fellow Christians. There were times in those early days after the break when she went down in grief to her bed and lay there physically ill in body. She voiced the fact that she wanted, above all things, to be at peace with all Christians. As time went on, she could not have countenanced or been a part of this once beloved group of people, and God knew this and let the break come. Because of a more modern trend of thought infiltrating through the movement, she had lost her place in India, and now that trend was fast becoming more evident. A tendency to follow the ways of the world and let down on the old-time preaching that has ever stirred hearts, and to replace it with higher education and modern methods, took hold and swept over the movement. There was no place for the spirit-filled man and woman who would not compromise and bow the knee to Baal. But this thing, reader, is not strange, for nearly every movement under the sun since time has begun started out on fire for God and holding a standard of holiness as the book requires. Yet, as soon as God blesses and multiplies and prospers, the leaders become heady, and the poor sheep follow after. Oft-times in sorrow, but fearful of the opinion of leaders, they yield. But always there are some warriors of the cross who will not sell their souls. Their lot is always, in such a time, to suffer misunderstanding and persecution. To this group, Faith Stewart belonged. Her mission in Cuba is not now under the board or the name where she once fellowshipped, but is registered as the First Church of God National of Cuba. A mission established here on earth, but whose headquarters are in heaven. Only recently, there was a pleading day after day for God to send in funds for food and rent of buildings, and a much-needed sum for other things. And when the answer came, there was a gathering in the reception room of the mission to kneel in praise for answered prayer. That was on March 19, 1957. Among the critical things said of her at one time was the idea that she lived here in Cuba in luxury. I have never, at any time or place, seen a more simple mode of living. The living room or reception room of the mission, where all visitors are received, had a few chairs and a tiny table. That is all. No rugs, curtains, and only one or two small pictures on the wall. The room is positively barren. Only the plainest and most necessary things are ever even purchased at any time. Now that room has been converted to a schoolroom, and there is no reception room. We simply sit in the schoolroom when we have company come to El Hogar. Only in summer are the desks taken out, and the chairs replace the school furniture. Her simple mode of life is in keeping with her character. Once we inquired as to the number of her shoes, thinking to secure a pair for her. She stopped a moment and then said, "For many years now I have trusted God to send in my clothes and shoes and just wear what He sends, so I really do not know the number anymore." She told friends once that she was very fond of the color pink, but wears whatever color, style, or figure that comes for her in the boxes marked with her name. Some of these fitted well and some not so well, but she went serenely on, feeling that they were what God had provided for her. She always accepted it as from the Lord and was satisfied. There are many things to be suffered by those who are willing to step out on faith alone that are not experienced by those working under a board. It is utterly amazing how many have come to Cuba with the ambition to take over the mission or some part of it for themselves after the toil of years and the suffering and sacrifice. Then, too, when the missionary is growing old, it seems an easy thing to slip in. There have been at times several different men who came apparently to do a labor of love, to help erect buildings, or perhaps to go among the various groups situated in different parts of the island, but who used their influence to get a hold of the work. These men for a time went along smoothly, and much damage was done before their duplicity came to light. They failed to recognize one fact. Faith Stewart was sold out to God, and God marvelously protected her, sooner or later, from these persons. Their evil ambitions came to light, and they were brought to naught. But in the meantime, each one has done much harm, and more often than not have been able to cause people to believe in them and give money that should have gone to the mission. Thus they have prospered for a while. Down through the years it has been surprising at the number who have tried, and sometimes who the person was. These people have never moved to the island, but made trips to and from for a period of time. All they have succeeded in doing has been to make hardships and sorrow and temporal loss, but in the end theirs is the loss. Once, when hearing of the near arrival of such a one who had been a traitor to the work in earlier days and was still trying to get a hold of it, I remarked, "I hope the plane that they are to arrive on just dips down in the water enough to scare him and send him back to the United States where he belongs." She looked at me and smiled and said, "My dear, you are the worst good woman I know." Not once has anyone heard her criticize and berate those who wronged her. She leaves them to God, who has said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay." Romans 12:19. I would be afraid to try to oppose and bring into her life the things that many have done, lest God Himself take over my case. Just a few years ago, a certain man who claimed to be quite a good Christian in the States went over, claiming to be a good friend of the mission. He went out in the interior and there found a fine congregation, and before anyone knew about it, he had so influenced them that there came a break that lasted for 2 or 3 years. But at last, in sorrow, they repented, and when their eyes were opened, they returned to the fold. Others have gone down to Cuba and taken pictures of the work. They have shown them about, hoping in this way to receive for themselves offerings that should go to the work in Cuba. If only God's people would be wiser and send their offerings to the main mission only, these people would get nowhere and soon drop their interest in getting ill-gotten gains. Another thorn along the highway was the persecution from the communists, who were steadily gaining ground in Cuba. They had a training school for their young men that had joined the mission property in Los Pinos. They threatened to destroy the mission, and many were the plans resorted to in order to accomplish their ends. At one time, 2 of the little children were lured outside the gate by giving them candy, and then they were taken away and long scratches were put on their backs until they were bleeding. Then the children were threatened. They were told to say to anyone that the young man who had charge of the boys' home had beaten them. They accused the home of cruelty to the little ones, and had a long article put in the newspaper with pictures of the 2 little children with the scratches on their backs as witness for the accusation made against the homes. Miss Stewart was compelled to procure a lawyer to take up their case, and was at last successful, but the day before the case came up, he could not be found. Neither did they ever know what happened to him. He had fled for his life to another section of the island. In vain they sought a lawyer brave enough to take the case. At last they visited the American embassy and laid the case before the consul, telling how no one would take the case. He said, "We have been expecting this, and this is the first outbreak of communism against the church. I am sorry, but we would not dare to enter the case, as our own lives would not be safe." So, alone, they faced the case in court without a representative. The court day finally came, and Faith Stewart, with a few faithful members of the mission, were there to present their side. Up and down the street, cars were parked for blocks. Ministers from other churches in the city had come to hear the case from practically all the denominations. The judge was there, but where were the communists? The time came and passed by when the case would be tried. Finally, a man hurriedly pushed through the crowd and made his way before the judge. "Sir," he said, "I'm sorry, but I have forced myself to come here today, and the other 3 men are at home sick in bed and unable to get up and be here." "It is about time you showed up," replied the judge. "The case is closed." The man turned hurriedly and started for the door, but 3 seats back from the front seat sat Faith Stewart. She arose suddenly from her seat and stood in the aisle in front of him, blocking his progress. "Wait a moment," she said in a clear voice. "Young man, the God in whom you do not believe, and the God whom I serve, has stretched forth his hand against these men and made them sick. Be careful how you live, and go back and tell them also that they had better take heed to their ways." So ended the case. But they did not forget. One day, when she was at her little home for a day or two in Buena Vista, she heard a knock at the front door. As she started to the front of the house, a warning came distinctly to her that she must not invite the caller in, but must go out and close the door behind her. So she opened the door and stepped outside and closed the door as she greeted the man standing there. He became quite angry and spoke in a low voice in plain English, saying, "I came here to kill you, but you have closed the door, and I dare not do it here in public, for all the neighbors are out, but I will get you later." And with that, he turned and walked angrily off the porch. Another plan was made by the communist school to have the young men who are members of the school try to lure the young teenage girls out of the home and as soon as possible ruin their character. Then they would accuse the home as being an unfit place for young girls to be reared. But the scheme was learned, and the girls were warned to stay away and not on any account to be the least friendly to the fine-looking young men so near. The whole plan failed again. One day an officer of the law came to the door at El Hogar and was admitted. He had an air of fear, and asked to go further into the office. When there he shut the shutters to the windows, asking, "Is there anyone about that will hear?" "I do not think there is anyone about." "Then," he said in a low voice, "for some time your name has been on the death list of the Communists, and also the name of the assistant who is over the boys." He warned her never to go out at night alone and to always be careful. Before he departed, he made known his name and office, bidding them never tell that he had come in mercy to warn them. But alas for this honorable man who was brave enough to risk his life to warn a missionary. No one knew if the Communists spied on him or just what happened, but they went to his home seeking to kill him. He had just left, and the wife opened the door and told them that her husband was not home. In anger they shot her on the spot, and the poor man was revenged for his act of kindness. But God works in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. There came a time when the Communist school that was so near El Hogar was broken up and disbanded. They had to sell out, and El Hogar went over and bought many of the beds for the homes from the very enemy that had tried to ruin and destroy. Again, God made them more than conquerors in the battle of atheism and Christianity. What a mighty God we serve!